This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And here we are. We're live on Pet Life Radio and Instagram, here for you, here for your pets. I'm just waving hi to some people I haven't seen in a while, talked to in a while. Dan, hello, how are you? And Nancy, wow. So anyway, so let's get started. First of all, many of you know I wasn't here last week. I was not here in LA. I was at the Western Veterinary Conference in Las Vegas. And it was, actually at showtime, I was on a plane, so pretty hard to do the show sitting in a jet seat on American Airlines. But anyway, usually when I travel, I try to arrange so I can even do it from here. Like, I'm going to be in Puerto Vallarta in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to do it then. Hey, B, how are you? And I assume that everybody who's here did obviously remember to move our clocks forward an hour. I like it better in the fall, where I get to, you know, get an extra hour of sleep. But what I do is I psych myself out. I change the clocks like at 8 o'clock p.m., so I made it 9 o'clock, and that way I went to bed at my normal time. So really, when you go to bed at 11, and then it turns out to be 2 a.m. and you get back to 3 or whatever it is, 1 becomes 2, that's when you lose an hour. I just don't like doing that. So I kind of jump ahead, do it to hours before. And the thing is, with changing the clocks, it doesn't fool your pets, because they have an inside clock. They know. And so when you get the extra hour of sleep in the fall, guess what? You don't, because they're going to get you up at the regular old time anyway. So, and then you're an extra hour then of just standing around and waiting for the rest of the world to get up. Anyway, the Western Vet Conference, as you recall, at the end of January, I was at the VMX, formerly the North American Veterinary Conference. They always battle who's the biggest veterinary conference. And the problem is they're a month apart. So, and the Western Veterinary Conference, it is supposedly number two. I got to tell you, at VMX, there were over almost 20,000 people. And that includes the speakers and the exhibitors and the attendees, the veterinarians, and some of the families, because it's in Orlando. But that's why, Steph, that's why I wasn't here, as I mentioned last week, because I was on a plane heading to Western Veterinary Conference, which is maybe the second largest. I haven't gotten the numbers yet, but it was packed. It was absolutely packed. The exhibit hall was just tremendous. And what I love about these conferences is that, you know, when you're a busy doc, it's tough to get all that CE in, which we need, really for a number of reasons. First of all, it's required by law, by our state associations, because we have to actually maintain a certain level of new material, of learning, staying current, et cetera, et cetera. So it's required. Also, it's good for any practitioner. You want to be up to date, you want to learn what's going on. And for many of us that are so busy, these conferences are really the best way to do it. I got about 9 hours more of CE. I got a lot at VMX. And so, you know, it's really, really great. But what I love about it, and I don't know if you saw my posts, but for example, it just so happened that I became a dog and cat guy. I'll see a couple of pocket pets here and there, but 98% of my patients are dogs or cats. You know, I'll see an occasional rat or a hamster or a guinea pig or a bunny, but dogs and cats are my thing. I mean, I still love horses, but, you know, you don't see horses running around, you know, Beverly Woods, California, West LA, Beverly Hills. You're not in Westwood. You're not going to see horses. So I had such a great experience working with this equine surgeon as a pre-vet. And when I was in veterinary school, I had such a great comfort. A lot of the clinicians that were there, whose sessions and when they were on the rotations in equine, they were shocked to see that I was going to be going small animal in West Los Angeles, California. They go, Jeff, we thought you were a horse guy. But that's a good thing, because I really love it. But one animal that it takes a lot of expertise. You need a lot of specialized equipment. You need to know a lot are birds. And I don't know if you saw in my post, but I am so crazy about birds. And they have such personality. You don't think they have personality, but they do. And it was so great working with them. And I'm very comfortable around them, and they're pretty comfortable around me. A lot of these bird rescues that are walking around with all these beautiful macaws and these parrots. There was a toucan that was really, really cool. I did two of them, and they're like miniatures, and they're the smallest of the toucan family. Anyway, they are really cool too, and really, really sweet. So let me see, bitten by another outdoor cat and hand is swollen 8 hours later. So if that's you being bit by a cat, then I will tell you this, that cats, there's something called cat scratch fever. Cat bites are potentially very dangerous in the sense that the bacteria in a cat's mouth are really aggressive. When I get bitten by dogs, and trust me, over the years, I've been bitten by many. Fortunately, nothing that too serious. I've had a couple of stitches here and there, but that's part. I kind of signed up for that when I became a veterinarian. If you're going to be close and working with them, I always say, my friend Marty, I just saw Marty Becker. He said he has not been ever bitten by a dog. And I said, well, Marty, first of all, you didn't practice as long as I have. And then now he's always maintained some sort of a position in the practice. But Marty does so many things for the industry that he is so busy that that was his choice. In other words, how can we help pets? My path for helping pets really is helping pets hands-on. And of course, it landed into some media stuff, and I've done TV shows. And I mean, back in 1998, I think it was, I got my Emmy. But I didn't go into veterinary medicine to be a TV doc. It just randomly, accidentally happened. Marty has done such a great job in educating the masses. He's written books. He started Fear Free. He's now starting Pain Free. So he just hasn't had the hands-on or doesn't have the hands-on that I've done. So when I was teasing him, Marty, if you've never gotten bitten, then you've never been on the floor with your pet, with your face in their face, then that doesn't count. All right. I know, that's like saying laboratory animal medicine or something, never been bitten by a dog. Of course not. He doesn't work with them. So anyway, the fun that I have is just doing that. With birds, I don't know how to explain it, but I feel so comfortable with them. And this is a cute story, actually. Years and years ago, one of our clients had a bird, a parrot. They were leaving town and they had nobody to take care of the parrot. So could they bring the parrot in, cage and all, and let it board by us? I said, sure. This bird was not a friendly parrot. What's so interesting about many of these birds, the citizens especially, they really bond to one person. I mean, it is not uncommon, a couple that own a bird, and the bird will be great with the wife and miserable with the husband or vice versa. They seem to bond with one person many times. Well, this parrot was impossible. It was an Amazon. It was a beautiful bird. And for me, it was like a challenge. I'm going to break into this bird. And I don't know how I was going to do it, but I was going to do it. And sure enough, slowly over time, every day I went and was touching and playing and feeding. And before you know it, I can get it to come up on my fingers. Then I got it to come up on my fingers, then out of the cage. And nobody else in the office could do that. It was just me, and it was so cute to be able to, I beat that bird. So anyway, but it's really a good feeling when you know that you have an affinity towards an animal, and that animal has an affinity back to you. And that's what completes a cycle, and that's what makes it so great. Okay, questions. Let me see what we got here. Yeah, birds, they are hilarious characters. I love them. All right. So let's go back real quick to this. That's how this whole thing started, about being bitten. So cat bites. So when I've been bitten by dogs, I wash the hands, soap and water. Maybe if it's superficial, put a little antibiotic ointment. When you get a cat bite, oh, different story. You need to probably put yourself on antibiotics. You may need to get a tetanus shot. And if it's still swollen 8 hours later, I mean, I would soak it, compress it. But again, you might need to see a doctor, and start antibiotics, because cat bites, I've seen some really, really, really bad cat bites. Fortunately, I've never been bitten that badly. And of course, as a veterinarian with access to all the antibiotics, I self-treat, of course. Of course I do. I put myself on antibiotics, but I do. So I think better be safe than sorry. Because if you have a really bad infection that is not treated well and soon enough, that can be disaster. So my recommendation, hot compress, soaking it really well, cleaning it really well, and you might want to start some antibiotics. Okay, wait, what else we got here? A cat scratch is equally bad. I got a major scratch a month ago, I would imagine that says. Still numb and painful. Yes. In fact, cat scratches, those nails, and I'm sure you've heard of cat scratch fever. If you haven't, you're going to hear about it now. Cat scratch fever. So it's a bacterium. And it's interesting because one of the things that happens, besides the fact that you get this terrible scratch and it is painful and you swell, your lymph nodes get really, really swollen. And I remember that two of my classmates ended up getting cat scratch fever while we were learning about oncology, cancer, and swollen lymph nodes, right? Lymphosarcoma as one, and how your nodes get really swollen. And these classmates were convinced they had lymphosarcoma. And fortunately, it wasn't lymphosarcoma, but it was cat scratch fever. So interesting. In my 40 plus years, I've never gotten catfish fever. I've never really gotten a bad bite. But as I said, I didn't let it get bad. I put myself on antibiotics when I had a cat bite. And especially if it was a deep cat bite. So I would definitely see, you might need to, if it's been a month ago and it's still numb and painful, I would, again, see your doc. You probably need to put yourself on some antibiotics. They are. It's painful. So that's what I would, even the mean cat seems like, yeah, they do. I know that dogs are, we always say dogs can read people better than people can read their dogs. I have been very fortunate enough to have some, again, if I knew what it was, I would bottle it and sell it. But I will tell you that I see a lot of fairly aggressive cats. I'm warned by the client as I'm getting the cat out of the box. Oh, be careful. He's tough. He doesn't like veterinarians. And I can have this cat literally, I'm holding it in my arms. I don't know what it is. It must be, it's something that they sense a certain level of comfort. Now, do I see mean cats that want to kill me? Of course I do. But there are many, many of them that are known to be a bit more aggressive, especially with veterinarians. And I seem to get along well with them. And these are all confirmations for me that of all the things I could have done with my life, I think this is it. I would do it all over again to have such like a love and an enjoyment of doing something for over 40 years and still liking it every day. That's a blessing. I know I'm a pretty lucky guy because most people I talk to do anything for 40 years. They're not thrilled about it anymore. Unless, of course, they're making boatloads of money. Maybe that way that can ease the discomfort of the repetition of doing something again and again. But I don't know. Okay, the concierge service. So I assume you're talking about AirVet. So it's an app. Download AirVet. At some point, you do it as an individual. It's not being provided to you by your employer. Or if you want to get your employer, if you have a work for a big company, then that's good too. But all you need to do is at one point, you have to get a hold of me. You need to click on a little button on top that allows you to edit. And you want to put down basically Jeff's Telehospital as your primary hospital. That way, you can also make an appointment with me. And otherwise, you'll always just get a random veterinarian, which is good too. We have, 500-600 vets on the platform. So either way, the whole goal is to make sure you have access to care 24/7. All right, I'm waving. So I'm just trying to think. Oh, I know it's a good one that we mention this often about the reason. Well, first of all, why I don't like vaccinating certain cats for diseases that they are not at risk for example. Indoor-only cats, which is what I recommend, especially in a city. If you're in the country somewhere, you can have an outdoor cat, a barn cat, it's okay. But if you're in the city because of dogs, cars, coyotes, feline leukemia, feline AIDS, I am not an advocate of vaccinating for diseases where the cat can't get. For example, rabies. And now in certain states, rabies is required by law, not in California for cats. So I don't recommend rabies. And I definitely don't recommend leukemia virus. All right, for an indoor-only cat, because there's no way they're going to get it. Just so you know, leukemia virus, my cat sometimes gets out. I don't care if it sometimes gets out. So leukemia is prolonged direct contact with leukemia-positive cat. That means they are rooming each other. They are sleeping together. They are eating near each other together. They're cuddling up. That is prolonged direct contact. If your cat gets out one night, spends the night out, hobnobs or whatever with some other cats, even if the cats were leukemia-positive, the cat's not going to get leukemia right away. It needs prolonged direct contact. However, what are some of the dangers of a vaccine? You say, well, a vaccine is supposed to help. What do you mean? Why danger? Very simple. Feline vaccine-induced sarcoma. Feline vaccine-induced sarcoma is a tumor. It's a tumor that is a soft tissue sarcoma, and it seems to be caused by a cat's reaction to certain vaccinations, which is why when we vaccinate cats now, or for me, almost any injection I give a cat, I'm going to give it in the thigh. Because if this cat should, heaven forbid, end up with this feline vaccine-induced sarcoma, the only treatment, the only good one anyway, is to amputate the limb. I know that sounds extremely aggressive. And when we get back from this break, I'm going to explain what I did recently. And hopefully will work. We'll have to see. But I did want to amputate, and I figured amputate obviously is a last resort. So it was a newer feline vaccine-induced sarcoma, and I decided to, you know what, I'm going to go for it, see if I can remove it, and I'll tell you what happened when we get back. Don't go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. there is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to your Pet Life Radio. We're just talking to let me repeat the question. And it's coming from one of my Instagram followers. It says, what are the pros and cons of neutering a male health-wise other than birth control? In Europe, the protocol is not neutering male dogs for health reasons. We'd love to hear your views on that. Okay, so we're saying, I think there are some health reasons. Number one, BPH, benign prostatic hyperplasia. Number two, testicular cancer. Now, is testicular cancer common? No, it's not. But interestingly, that's a well-timed question, Jan, is that I have a dog coming in this week where I'm going to neuter. Why? Because he came in for his routine physical, 7 years old, and I'm feeling, first of all, I'm shocked nowadays when I see a dog, especially in my practice, that is seven and still has testicles. It's obviously pretty good at recommending neutering. But so anyway, one testicle is big, round, firm, and the other one is like soft and mushy. And that's classic Sertoli cell tumor. And interestingly, which testicle you think is the one that's affected by the cancer, by the Sertoli cell? You think it's the big, hard, firm one or the soft, mushy one? Well, it turns out to be, it's usually a soft, mushy one. And to compensate, the other one gets a lot bigger. But either way, we're going to neuter. But here's some other reasons. And again, health reasons, well, beyond prostatic hyperplasia. Now, interestingly, they say if you neuter a male dog young, you can prevent prostate cancer. I don't think that's been proven. I don't think the link is really prostate cancer. However, it is benign prostatic hyperplasia. And some of these dogs can get very sick and very uncomfortable, and they can't be. Just ask any guy who's got a prostate issue, and they can tell you it's not fun. So neutering definitely will control that. Now, but here's my take on this, and I'm going to give you just a quick thought, and that is that if you were to make a couple of assumptions, let's flat assumption. Number one, let's say half the dogs on the planet are male and half are female, okay? And let's make another assumption, and it's probably a low number, but let's say we're up that half of those females and males are spayed or neutered and the other half not. So if you were to take that pie chart, okay, divide it to four, you have half a male, half female, half fixed and not half not fixed. So what would then be based on that chart? It's a big assumption. The number of animals that you found dead on a highway randomly, okay, what would the percentage be of a non-neutered male? Well, let's see, half a male, half female, so that's, we're now at 50%. Half those are fixed, half not fixed. That's another 50% of 50, that's 25%. You would think then just randomly, if it was just random numbers, set 25% of a dog found dead on a U.S. road and highway would be a non-neutered male. Well, guess what? The number is 75%. What does that tell you? They are so overrepresented. Why? Because male dogs want to roam. And these are the dogs that are going to jump out of a backyard. They are going to roam. Intact male dogs have this strong urge, desire, and that's why the vast majority of dogs that are found dead on U.S. roads and highways, meaning, i.e. hit by a car because of roaming, are non-neutered males. Now, let's also talk about simple behavior things. Aggression, intramale aggression. You realize that you can't go to a dog park. They won't let you in. You can't go to a daycare facility if the dog is not neutered. So it's a problem, and there is more aggression. Not to mention, behaviorally, dogs like to mark. Intact male dog is going to mark its territory way more than a neutered male dog. So now you have a dog that's pissing all over the house or in the yard or on everything they can find. So it's become a... Now let's look at the negatives. The negatives. Does it change their personality? No. Does it change their watchdogging? No. In fact, many police dogs, and especially these Belgian Malinois, are female. They are just, if not more aggressive sometimes. as they say, the female of a species is more deadly than the male. So these are the things that you need to consider. If you want a pet and you want a pet that behaves well, that's going to stay in your backyard, that doesn't have a tendency to roam, doesn't have a tendency to fight other dogs. You could take it to a grooming parlor. You could take it to a doggy daycare. You take it to a dog park. Then why not just get them neutered? And not to mention the population control issue, because those dogs that are roaming that maybe didn't get hit by a car, but he knocked up a couple of females. So you just have to know that there are so many ethical, moral, health reasons that I like to promote. Now, as we mentioned, there is one breed that seems to have more cancer problems being neutered than not neutered. And again, the studies are going on. The big study started at Davis, but they're going on, and that is the Golden Retriever. And then one can extrapolate, well, what about all the doodles that we have and the Golden Crosses? Might that be an issue too? I don't know. But if someone has a purebred Golden Retriever and they spend a lot of money on this purebred Golden Retriever, and they want it to stay healthy the longest, that's the only breed that I will allow a discussion to say, you know what, I'm okay. You know, the study's out there. Maybe we shouldn't neuter. But short of that, I am a big fan of neutering males. And, you know, again, seeing these backyard breeders, seeing the poor quality of a lot of these dogs, especially now with the Frenchies, seeing so many dogs, I work with rescues, they are running out of fosters. They don't have facilities. They're running out of fosters. Why? Because there are so many of them, and that's how many dogs are being put to sleep. So population control is a real biggie. Unless you are a well, responsible, certified breeder, you know what you're doing. You know how to take care of the problems when they occur, and they're going to occur when you're breeding. Then do yourself and all these other homeless pets a favor and get your dogs fixed. That's kind of my feeling. Trust me, there's no shortage of dogs. I've done these missions, as you know. Well, I've been to Peru a couple of times, and Mexico a couple of times. Just there are so many street dogs, intact street dogs, that are contributing to the problem. We have to get that under control. And we do it by spaying and neutering. So I said you don't suspect mass in a cat, unfortunately. You were at a conference. Turns out you did not have the knowledge to remove the mass, which was in the esophagus. Ay, ay, ay. I have to say, well, if it's a mass is in the esophagus, that is a really, really tough surgery. And to remove it, if it's in the esophagus, then you probably have to do through a scope, which we don't have. That would have to be referred to a board-certified surgeon that has a scope. But I'd be really curious to see the x-rays or whatever it was that they did, pictures of an endoscopy, to see what this mass looks like. Esophageal tumors are very, very rare and very, very difficult. So you'd have to have the special equipment to do that. Hello, I'm waving. How often should a large dog have their teeth cleaned? Well, it really depends on, first of all, the dog itself, what it eats, how often the teeth are being brushed. I will say that I think this larger breeds need less frequent dentistries than the smaller ones. Smaller breeds now, especially when they're older, I'm seeing them almost every 4 to 6 months for cleaning. Big dogs, I've had some really big dogs come in that are, you know, 8, 9 years old that have pretty darn good teeth. I mean, I'm amazed. But you need to brush your dog's teeth. There's no way around it. I always say a kind of a tongue-in-cheek, I'll talk to a client and say, I'll tell you what, because they're shocked. They're shocked when they have a dog come in and I see a lot of tartar, a lot of gingivitis. They say, oh God, it's time to go. But we just did like 6 months ago. I want to say, really, 6 months ago? I'll tell you what, let's do a little experiment at home. Not a big one, a simple, simple experiment. By the way, how often do you brush your teeth? Well, at least twice a day. Of course, twice a day, right? At least in the morning, at least at night, right? I'll tell you what, we don't, not 6 months. Forget 6 months. Just 1 month. 1 month. Don't brush your teeth at all for 1 month. Let's see what your teeth look like at the end of the month. And that's when you realize, oh, I guess waiting 6 months is not unusual. You got to brush their teeth and it's so easy. So anyway, we can talk more about that, but get a finger brush. Don't get the finger brush. It's like, you know, the rubber silicone sleeve, but get the ones with the real toothbrush bristles. And what I find, I think I've demonstrated this before, don't go at them. Come from behind them. So they're facing away from you and you're sticking your finger in and you're doing it from behind and they don't seem to object that much. And you use a nice flavored toothpaste that has a, you know, it's usually a poultry flavored or beef flavored, and they seem to tolerate it very well and do it regularly. Ideally, every day, every other day will be okay too, but that's the key. You really got to do it all. Okay, so let me tell you then about really quickly. So as we said, with this feline vaccine-induced sarcoma, the treatment of choice is amputation. I didn't want to amputate, and I felt like I might be able to get around this one. What happens is they grow very deep into the muscular layer, I mean, into deep tissue. It's almost like in order to get the whole thing out, you're getting so much of the muscle that the cat can't use its leg anyway. I mean, they're so aggressive, so frustrating. Anyway, this one was kind of new. I said, you know what? Let me try to get it. So I did. I was able to peel what I think most of it out. The biopsy came back just saying the cells went to the edge. You couldn't get margins, but I felt really good about it. So the way I look at it, this, the cat's already 11 years old. So if it ever comes back and it takes a year, cat will be 12. I'm hoping that this cat will do okay. And post-op is doing great. And it's such a relief for this cat not to have that huge mass. So at this point, all we got to do is watch. If it starts coming back, and I told the owners, this is the one shot we have. If it works, great. If we can buy time, great. If not, we'll just have to do the amputation and see what happens. The good news is about the feline vaccinated sarcoma, it usually doesn't metastasize to distant tissue. So it's not one of those tumors that's going to end up in the lungs or in the liver. So there's a good chance that after amputating, we can actually cure the cat. Where we used to give the shots in cats, like dogs, anywhere in the trunk, anywhere on the body. And when they would get this feline vaccinated sarcoma, there was nothing you can do. It was a death sentence. You know, and that's why I get very frustrated. I was working with a cat recently. It was my first time seeing this cat. It was at El Sur Animal Hospital, and I felt the mass right behind the neck, the scruff of the neck, which is where a lot of people used to and still, unfortunately, give vaccines to a cat. And it drives me nuts. There's no way that they shouldn't know. Not every veterinarian should know this by now. And I told them, I do fear that it is this feline vaccine-induced sarcoma. And unfortunately, at this point, there's not a lot you can do. I mean, it's a shame. So I get very frustrated to this day because this is not brand new news. This is now a year old. This is 10 years ago we started making the link. So anyone who's been practicing for at least 10 years now, or anyone who's just graduating, this should be part of the curricula that they should know that when it comes to cats, you must vaccinate in a thigh. Plain and simple, very easy. It's an automatic. So it does, there's a lot of things about some of my colleagues that sometimes frustrate me, but cat scratches, yes. I think I got to everybody. I think I did. No more waves, no more questions. Okay, so what we're going to do, next week I'll be here. I'll be here for the next couple of weeks. And then on the 20th, which is a Thursday, the fam and I are going down to Puerto Vallarta. But I'll do on Sunday mornings, I can do my show live from Puerto Vallarta. You'll see some beautiful weather. You'll see hopefully a gorgeous view. I'll show you of the pool area, the beach. It's really great. So looking forward to that. Oh, here's another question. Good morning. My 12-year-old boxer is becoming more sedentary and wants to eat a lot more. He gained 5 pounds recently. Is that a concern? Well, I mean, here's the problem. As they get older, then they usually become less active. If you don't modify the diet as they become less active, then they're going to gain weight because they're not burning the same amount of calories. Then this is where the vicious cycle starts. So the more weight they gain, the even less they want to do. The less they do, the more weight they're going to gain. We got to break the cycle. How? First of all, we got to cut down the food. We got to reduce the caloric intake to compensate for the decrease in exercise. And then we also want to, as much as we can, kind of force the exercise because it's good for them as well. You want to make sure that if it's a boxer, they're on some sort of joint supplement. Maybe they're on some sort of an Adequan, which is more of a medication. It's an injection, which is a really good injection. It's a polysulfated glycosaminoglycans, just like you would see in Chondroflex and glucosamine, et cetera, chondroitin sulfate, MSM, but it's really, really potent. So that would help a lot. And then again, an older dog, 12-year-old, a boxer, I would assume has been having recent blood tests. And if so, continuing every year, if the liver is fine, then I would also start a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. And there's a good one that's called Galliprant that seems to be better, safer for dogs with liver or kidney enzyme elevations. If not, all the good ones, the carprofen, which is good, vetprofen, Remedil, they're all the same. Or you can use Deramax, which is also good, Daracoxib. You can also use Medicam, Meloxicam. So all these are really good non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and should be given to help the inflammation. That will at least help the pet feel better. Then there's a new one out there. I'm sure you've heard about it. Don't be afraid of it. Do not be afraid of it. It's called Librela. I just came back from a conference and we talk about a lot Librela, a lot of my colleagues. It's interesting. You hear all this junk on the internet, and not one of my dozens of colleagues that have been using it for over 100 doses each, as we have in my practice, and have had zero negative effects. Zero. So I'm not afraid of it. I would use it on my own dog. And even if you had a dog had a reaction, the ones that die from it, no. So far, on the few that have been studied, every dog that has died from it had another much more serious problem brewing that was undetected. And like tumors, a splenic mass that ruptured, the dog bled out. Nothing to do with the Librela. Unfortunately, when are we using Librela? We're using it dogs that are having a lot of problems and are with arthritis, and they're generally older. Well, guess what? Arthritis isn't the only old dog problem. There are a lot of old dog problems. Cancer, tumors, organ dysfunction, liver disease, kidney failure. I mean, there are so many things that can affect an older dog that we can't say, oh, I just started a Librela shot and he died a week, 2 weeks later. No, it's not realistic. So is it possible to have a bad reaction? It's possible to have a bad reaction to anything. You can have an anaphylactic reaction to an antibiotic that you took for years. Penicillin, for example. So read things, do some homework. They're all like that little grains of salt, the little things. You just have to be much more sort of aggressive. When you are reading up on these things, don't just stop and look at one article. If you want to dig deep, dig deep. That's okay. But get some more facts, right? When they say liars figure, but figures don't lie. So yeah, you have to kind of look at these things with that grain of salt, do some homework, do the research, get some really good information, and then you make your decision. Again, talk to your veterinarian. When people talk to me, I say, you know what? I've had not any bad reactions, only positive. People actually calling. You know, it's good for once a month. We don't call them to remind them. They are calling us and saying, a month is up. It's great. You gave me a new dog. I need the next shot. I'm hearing a lot of that. So that's important. So maybe try that as well, Martineau. Cut down the food. Cut down the caloric intake. Do what you can to help them relieve any pain or discomfort. Do what you can to help the joints, meaning the glycosaminoglycans. And there are so many out there, so many brands, so many shots, and including the adequate injection. That seems to be a real keeper. It's fantastic. All right. Let me know how things work out. You know how to reach me. All right. Any good? If there's nothing else, we're going to tune out for the day. Oh my God, 9:40 already. Mark is giving me dirty looks. I know that it's time to get out of our show. So next week, we'll be here, same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio, on Instagram Live at 9 a.m. in the West. Whatever you got, 10, 11, and up to noon in the East. And we will see you then. If you have any questions during the weekend, always reach me here at Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, or Dr. Jeff at DrJeff.com, or Jeff at AirVet.com. So many different ways you can get a hold of me. So there's no excuse. And you can also, most of you probably have my cell phone, so you can use that as well. See you next week.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.